The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Today is Thursday, July 16th. What to know today about another COVID record in the U.S. and how the response efforts compare to other disasters. And an unprecedented and high-profile Twitter hack. Who was hit and what happened? Plus an update on Kanye's 2020 bid, the largest sports crowd in months, and where you can now buy one shoe at a time. Then hang out after the news for Thing to Know Thursday's bonus interview about how pro basketball players are adapting to life on lockdown in the NBA bubble. Welcome, welcome to The Newsworthy. All the day's news in less than 10 minutes. Fast, fair, fun, and on the go. I'm Erica Mandy. Thanks so much for being here. You ready? Let's do this. A lot of the U.S. is now in disaster mode, with leaders responding to the surge of COVID-19 cases much like they would the aftermath of a hurricane. It comes as the U.S. once again broke the record for the most new COVID-19 cases within 24 hours. In Florida, for example, emergency management officials are setting up testing sites, delivering supplies, and sending personnel to hard-hit areas around the state. The head of Florida's Emergency Management Agency says his department is now running the largest operation in state history, but it's been complicated by misinformation. He explains it like this. When a Category 5 storm hits, no one argues whether it was actually a Category 5 or maybe a 2. But in the age of the coronavirus, he says he's had to argue every step of the way. It's a similar story on the opposite end of the country. California hit a new record in both COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations. LA's mayor said the outbreak is now getting close to code red, or in other words, is close to everything having to fully shut down once again. All of this as the flu season is around the corner. So public health experts are still pushing people to wear face coverings whenever they're in public and cannot physically distance. In fact, agree with a mandate or not, more nationwide stores are now requiring them, no matter what the local laws say, including the world's largest retailer. Instead of greeters, Walmart now says it'll have so-called health ambassadors stationed near store entrances starting next week. They'll be in charge of reminding customers of the new requirement and will get new training to try and make that process as smooth as possible. Other big-name stores like Sam's Club, Kroger, Kohl's, Best Buy, and Starbucks announced nationwide mask mandates this week as well. And many places will be offering complimentary masks if people don't already have them. The CDC continues to recommend face coverings to help slow the spread of the virus. The government's top infectious disease expert is the subject of more White House controversy. A senior White House trade advisor criticized Dr. Anthony Fauci in a USA Today opinion column. Peter Navarro wrote that every time he's interacted with Fauci, the doctor was wrong about everything. This was an on-the-record criticism, but it's not the first time the Trump administration has questioned or tried to discredit Fauci. Remember, over the weekend, White House officials sent several news outlets quotes and documents that showed Fauci was wrong about things in the early days of the pandemic. But now it seems President Trump is trying to defuse the tension. When he was asked about the op-ed, the president said Navarro should not have written it. And Trump said he still has a good relationship with Fauci. So what does Dr. Fauci say about all of this? Well, he told The Atlantic that efforts to discredit him are, quote, bizarre. Specifically, he responded to the list of quotes that went out over the weekend, saying he stands by all of them because in context and at the time, the things he said were true. He added, quote, let's stop this nonsense and focus on fighting COVID-19. At this point, he's still on the White House Coronavirus Task Force. Well, there's another health crisis affecting Americans. Drug overdoses are on track to hit a new high. The CDC released preliminary numbers this week, and they showed nearly 71,000 Americans died of drug overdoses last year. That's nearly 5% more than the year before. About half of those people overdosed from synthetic opioids like fentanyl. Deaths from cocaine and meth also jumped. The increase is especially disturbing because lawmakers had already allotted billions of dollars to fight the opioid epidemic. And those numbers were before the pandemic hit, so the numbers could even be worse for 2020. Health officials say the pandemic and the recession it's caused have already led to a mental health crisis, which could then push overdose deaths even higher. Advocates say emergency funding is needed to keep treatment and recovery programs afloat. But in the meantime, there are still resources available for anyone who needs help. We posted a link in today's show notes with more information, and there's also a free national helpline, 1-800-662-HELP. It's one of the most high-profile Twitter hacks ever, and it led to Twitter taking unprecedented action to stop it. It started when scammers took over the accounts of some of the world's most famous people and companies yesterday. We're talking about Elon Musk, Bill Gates, Kanye West, former Vice President Joe Biden, Apple, and dozens of others. The hackers tweeted from those accounts pushing a known Bitcoin scheme. The hackers' tweets told people to send Bitcoin to a specific address and that any amount sent would be doubled and sent back. Of course, Bitcoin is essentially a digital currency, and unfortunately, hundreds of people fell for this. In total, the New York Times reports victims ended up sending in nearly $120,000. Twitter stopped all verified accounts from sending out new tweets yesterday while the company tried to figure out this issue, but as of this morning, most of them should be able to tweet once again. Now, Twitter says it thinks it got to the bottom of how this happened. It says hackers first compromised the social network's internal servers that can usually only be accessed by employees. At this point, no more details were revealed. Twitter says it doesn't want to inspire copycats, but it is still reviewing security procedures. To be continued. Kanye West will officially appear on presidential ballots in at least one state this November. The superstar qualified in Oklahoma. One of his representatives filed the paperwork and paid the filing fee just hours before the state's deadline. TMZ also reports a group called Kanye 2020 filed election forms with the Federal Election Commission. But West is not running as a Democrat or a Republican. He actually says he's a member of the birthday party. To be continued. All right, we have more news coming up, but first, this episode is brought to you by HelloFresh. HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit. You can skip the trip to the grocery store and actually make cooking at home easy and fun. First of all, HelloFresh saves you time and stress. They offer no-contact delivery to your doorstep, giving you fresh, pre-measured ingredients along with delicious and easy-to-follow seasonal recipes. You'll feel like a cooking pro in no time. And get dinner on the table in just about 30 minutes without any of the stress of planning and shopping. And I love that more than 90% of the ingredients are sourced directly from growers to ensure the freshest recipes. One of my favorite meals has been crispy Parmesan chicken with garlic, herb couscous, and lemony roasted carrots. Yum. Just go to HelloFresh.com/80newsworthy and use the code 80newsworthy to get a total of $80 off, including free shipping on your first box. Additional restrictions apply. Please visit HelloFresh.com for more details. Again, get a total of $80 off, including free shipping on your first box. Just go to HelloFresh.com/80newsworthy. That's 80newsworthy. And use the code 80newsworthy. All right, now back to the news. Thousands of fans turned out for a NASCAR race in Tennessee last night. The AP reports this was likely the biggest sporting event crowd in the U.S. since early March. At least 20,000 people showed up for the All-Star race at Bristol Motor Speedway. There was social distancing, though. Fans were spread out across the stands, and they did have plenty of room. The Speedway can hold about 160,000 people, but ticket sales for last night's event were capped at just one-fifth of that. So while it was the largest major sporting event crowd in months, it was likely the smallest turnout in the racetrack's nearly 60-year history. CBS has inked a new partnership with the NAACP. The civil rights group will help produce scripted and unscripted content for the network. CBS has been criticized in the past for not being diverse or inclusive, so now the whole idea is to create more diversity at CBS and elevate Black voices. Variety reports on top of its partnership with the NAACP, the network is also vowing to hire more people of color, and it set aside money to support minority creators. Well, we've talked about nationwide shortages of things like toilet paper and coins, but there's another shortage now happening, aluminum cans. Apparently, cans are in short supply because people have been stocking up on soda and beer to ride out this pandemic. Fox News reports canned drinks are more popular than bottled ones because they stack better and they're easier to store. But right now, producers cannot make the cans fast enough to keep up with that demand. The report says Coca-Cola and Pepsi have only been prioritizing their best sellers, so some of the less popular drinks and flavors are going to be harder to find, at least for now. Manufacturers have announced plans to build new factories, but it could take 2 years to get everything up and running. The online retailer Zappos is trying out a new way to sell shoes. It's letting shoppers buy just one shoe instead of a pair. The AP reports this could help people with different sized feet and also amputees, saving them money since a single shoe will cost less. Zappos says shoppers have actually been asking about this for years, so it's decided to give it a try. For now, the change is just in the testing phase and it only applies to about 80 shoes. But if all goes well, Zappos says it will expand those options. Today, we'll get to see the sun in a whole new light. Scientists are releasing brand new images of the sun, and they're the closest ever taken. CBS News reports they were captured at about half the distance between the Earth and the Sun by a satellite called Solar Orbiter. Scientists are pretty excited about this. They say the images exceed expectations and will help them better understand the Sun. The photos will be released by NASA and the European Space Agency this morning. And when they are released, we plan to post them on Twitter and Instagram. Just find us at NewsworthyPod. And that's it for the main 10 minutes of news today. But now it's time for Thing to Know Thursday, where a different expert explains a different thing to know only on Thursdays after the news. And this week, we're talking about the upcoming NBA season. This year's season restarts July 30th, so it's coming up. And games will only happen inside an ESPN sports complex at Walt Disney World. The 22 teams playing this season have already arrived in Orlando, Florida, and are starting to get used to the isolated campus now known as the bubble. So our guest today is Baxter Holmes. He's a Los Angeles-based senior writer for ESPN who focuses on in-depth stories around the NBA. Today, he's sharing what life is like inside the bubble, what happens if a player does get COVID-19, and even the impact on fans. Hey, Baxter, thanks so much for coming on The Newsworthy.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right. So first, what's your reaction to this whole concept of resuming the NBA season, but only in Florida and only at the sports complex at Disney World? Is this a smart move?
It's interesting right now because when the decision was made, the cases weren't what they are now as we're recording it in Florida. You know, they recently had 15,000 cases, which was a new record for the state and a record for any state in the country. And Adam Silver said recently on a conference call with reporters that if they were making the decision now, they likely wouldn't have chosen Florida or the location. But, you know, he's beat the drum and people around the NBA feel that with the testing protocols in place and everything, that it will actually be safer inside the bubble than outside it, not only in Florida, but for anywhere in the country.
And I do want to talk about what happens if and when someone tests positive for COVID-19 inside the bubble. But first, can you paint a picture for us about what life is like in the NBA bubble? Who's allowed in? How are they testing people? How are the players and coaches adapting so far?
Sure. So, it's held at the Walt Disney World sports complex. There's three different main hotels that the teams are staying at. They're kind of spread out across each of them. The early on testing is daily. But right now, yeah, I mean, the NBA has worked pretty hard to try to come up with activities to help keep people busy, even though, you know, things are contained, obviously, and people can't really leave campus. You have to quarantine for, I think, 10 days upon return or somewhere around that number. If you do leave campus or you cross a line, which I think a couple guys have already done, is they went out, they like ordered Postmates and then delivery food and then went too far to go pick it up and now have to quarantine again. But the league has organized things like, you know, fishing and bowling, and there's different outdoor games that guys can play, card games, things like that. They're doing as much as they can under really extraordinary circumstances to try to maintain elements of normalcy. But make no mistake, it's an incredibly unique situation. And these are players and a culture that, especially on the road, are used to coming and going. So it's definitely an adjustment. It's early on. I'll be most curious to see where we're at in about a month.
When we look at some of the Dallas Mavericks on Twitter, it seems more like summer camp than isolation, right? What do you think the general feeling is out there? Is it fear or is it fun? Is it a little bit of both?
I think it's fun early on. It is kind of summer camp in a way. There's no way that all you get 22 teams together in one particular spot. It's never happened. The closest we get to this really is summer league, but not everybody's there. And it's, you know, it's hit and miss if some of the stars are going to be there. So it's really unique in that way. And look, a lot of these guys, even though they compete against each other a lot, they're friends and it's a small world. A lot of them have played against each other forever. So it's a chance for everyone to get together. But again, I think as time goes on, as people are kind of feel the isolation, the inability to leave, the inability to, you know, be with family members for a certain amount of time, just the length of time, you know, that'll be the real test and challenge mentally for these guys.
And the big question, what does happen if someone gets COVID that's inside the bubble?
Yeah, so the league does have procedures in place. They'll, you know, and there's an amount of kind of confirmed tests that players will have to take to make sure it's not a false positive. But they'll be quarantined kind of in an isolation. I believe they refer to it as isolation housing for a minimum of 2 weeks. And I spoke to some of the league's medical specialists recently who were wanting to really emphasize that the 2 week window that people have talked about, that's kind of the floor. Yeah. And they'll be monitored during that time by specialists, and there'll be a determination as to when they can leave isolation. And after that point, they also have to take a cardiac screening. There have been some kind of unusual things that have happened, as we've seen across the country, where people get COVID and different, you know, organs are affected differently. There's kind of a wide range of how it's affecting different people. And so that's something that the league is wanting to stay on top on after seeing some recent studies of the way in which it affects the heart. And that also addresses something that people have felt in the league curious about, like, you know, how will this affect lung capacity? How will this affect heart capacity? There's concerns about lingering effects. So a cardiac screening is one of the last things that everybody has to, the hurdle, I would say, that people have to clear before they're allowed to begin resuming team organized activities and put them on the path towards potentially playing again.
Because of the possibility of lingering issues, are players really facing a choice right now of risking their health and therefore potentially their futures as a professional athlete overall?
Well, everybody faces risk to some degree. The thing that's obvious is that the players are not of an age and health range that would place them at the highest risk. There's far more concern about particular coaches or staff members on teams who are of an age or have certain underlying health issues that put them at more of a risk. Players aren't necessarily there, but there is the wild card of, you know, you don't necessarily know how everyone's body will react to this. There is a risk there, but, you know, money is an important factor, as it is with everything. You know, not playing, missing out on, and being healthy and cleared and missing out on paychecks, especially as paychecks have already been reduced. And there's kind of the financial uncertainty that looms over the NBA's immediate future, not only this, but for next season and beyond. It makes it a calculated risk, I would say, for a lot of players.
What are the economics for the NBA in this whole situation?
I mean, they've already lost substantial amounts of money from the league shutting down on March 11th. And we've reported that it's over $1 billion. And so I don't know exactly what they stand. I know they're spending upwards of $150 million to try to put this on, but they're trying to recoup as much as they can, especially from, you know, if it's satisfying regional sports network television agreements that different teams have. Or just with their national TV partners, you know, with Turner and with ESPN. But yeah, there's, you know, there's bigger things even on the horizon with, especially with next season. Like, how are we going to function, have a season with no vaccine potentially? You know, how do we try to plan that, which could potentially begin in December? It's a very murky, uncomfortable conversation.
What do you expect for the 2021 season?
Well, it's a great unknown. You know, when this season ends, I think it's scheduled to end in about October, mid-October. And I think training camp for the next season is supposed to start less than a month later, which is a fairly tight turnaround. And then it's in December. And I have lots of questions about travel, about hotels. I don't know how you have fans in the arena. I don't know how anybody has fans in an arena in a current environment where there's no proven, you know, preventative treatment or vaccine. It's a really hard riddle. I mean, everybody right now is focused on Orlando and trying to make this work. And I understand that. But the riddle, you know, beyond is coming sooner than later.
So last question, with no fans in the stands, at least for this season, what do you expect the experience to be like for fans watching from home? Is it going to be eerie?
Oh, I'm sure it'll be eerie. I'm sure it'll be eerie for players. And there's, I think, a hope that, you know, once the guys are back out there and they're playing, that there'll be some sense of normalcy. But when's the last time any of these players have played without any fans, really? I mean, they spend most of their life in front of fans and packed stadiums and whatnot. So just the sound itself in the place will be weird. And I'm sure the NBA will do. I think they've reported that they're going to do as much as they can to try to mimic, you know, the environment and create an experience that's close to normal to keep the fans involved. But it'll be weird, you know, on so many levels. And I'm sure it'll be weird for the people at home watching. But I'll say this, too. I think with the state of everything in the country, you know, having the NBA back and being able to watch games and live basketball, you know, it'll be a welcome sight for a lot of fans, no doubt about it.
And as always, you can read more about this topic and our guest in today's episode notes. Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to share if you enjoyed the show. The Newsworthy is here for you by 4 a.m. every weekday. We'll be back tomorrow with your news roundup for Friday and the weekend. Until then, have a great day.